Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Hits you just like getting the snow off your windshield this morning. I don't know if it's good, but it's there.
It's there.
It hits you.
It's been snowing consistently for the last few hours.
Your good morning hits better than the snow hits the windshield, actually. Yeah, you're right.
Happy Tuesday. Happy Veterans Day as well if you have off, hanging out. Good for you. All right, all the troops. It's snowing. We finally got fall, winter. Finally arrived.
And this is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I'm Derek Kramer. He's Zach Jones. Oh, boy. I don't know. Where do we start? Do we start with how obnoxiously wrong we were on pregame? Do we start with the game that was that made us so obnoxiously wrong? Do we start with how Dolphins Twitter found us being obnoxiously wrong? Do we go with, oh, it's snowing outside, so there's your there's your escape from it. Oh, hey, the Sabres, they're just cursed.
There's a few things, yeah. UB basketball tonight at DePaul. That'll be good. Over on the bet, 15-20. I think 7 o'clock tonight. Yeah, that, at least that's a positive. 18.5 point dogs, so maybe not.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, bad weekend for Buffalo sports, namely the Bills, who now, I mean, they're in a really bad spot. Not the worst spot they've ever been in. I mean, what were they a few years ago? 6-6?
Yeah.
I mean, a few games further along than this. And those teams were arguably better than this one now. It's just, it all kind of seems like it's crumbling in on them. They've picked up key injuries on defense seemingly every week, and that continued. Landon Jackson picked up an injury, but now Dalton Kincaid week to week with that hamstring injury. We did get that confirmation yesterday from Sean McDermott. And now they've seemingly, we'll see if this carries on, next year, even the rest of the year. New England has passed them by. They're 8-2 now. The Bills are 6-3. They've got Tampa coming into the house, and Tampa's got their own injuries. Bucky Irving not playing. That could be a huge matchup, but Emeka Abuka is an amazing young receiver for them. Baker Mayfield has had moments where he's looked like an MVP kind of quarterback this year. They're in a bad spot, and it kind of starts with the fact that they're losing multiple games where they really had no business losing. Atlanta is on that list, absolutely. And then a Miami team that bullied you for four quarters. It wasn't like Miami just hung around like these last few games that have been close. Miami kind of hangs around, but the Bills still do their business on offense. Sunday was not the case with that. They were bullied for four quarters. You never had the lead. It's very quickly 13-0, and because there's a missed extra point there, but it's quickly 13-0, and I think most of us were just kind of sitting there going, what the hell just happened? And that's kind of been the story of the Bills, and you can argue the AFC at large, is that anybody can lose to anybody. There really is no great team. I think that gets proven more and more as the weeks go by. Indianapolis survives Atlanta purely off of Jonathan Taylor being incredible and Michael Penix being unable to hit a receiver late in the game.
Or a crucial drop that could have helped them win a game.
Darnell Mooney as well, yep. Denver, don't really know what's going on there with Bo Nix and Sean Payton. Colin Cowherd, who's very close to Sean Payton, was acknowledging on a show last week that Denver could move on from Bo Nix. And if he's saying that with his relationship with Peyton, that is something to perk your ears up a little bit. They can't really score. We actually end and start the week with the same scores. 10-7 on Thursday Night Football, 10-7 on Monday Night Football. New England, they have one of the weakest schedules we've ever seen. They're mowing right through it, but it's a very weak schedule. Pittsburgh's at the top of the AFC North. Miraculously, they're not good at all. And then you've got Chargers, Bills, Jaguars. That's your current playoff seed right now. Jaguars have a real problem at quarterback.
And the Jaguars, by the way, they're the last gate keeping out Kansas City. And they lost. I would say almost embarrassingly.
Yeah. Yeah. They lost to Davis Mills.
Okay. Never mind. Not almost.
Yeah. Actually, they lost to Davis Mills. Yeah.
Actually,
absolutely.
Embarrassingly. And they had a big lead, too. So, yeah. No, shame on you.
Chargers, both their tackles are out. Like that's the positive I can take from all this, is that the AFC at large does not look good.
It's heavily flawed.
It is a very flawed conference. But to that point, though, the Bills might be one of the more flawed teams. Their passing attack can be anemic for games on end where there's just no juice to it. They've now lost Dalton Kincaid for likely a few weeks. He is week to week with a hamstring injury. Palmer, we'll see if he comes back, but we've seen what this passing game looks like without Kincaid. It is not good, and it's not like Palmer is this world-beating wide receiver. Maybe he comes in and changes things. Maybe that's true. But if James Cook is stopped, that offense is just stuck in the mud. They don't know where to go. And I look at a team like Tampa, they'll probably come out and play a lot harder. I don't doubt that. But the way they play, the way they have to play on offense, tied with all the injuries they have, they can come out and play great against Tampa. It may not mean anything. They still may lose that game because the high-end talent on Tampa has popped off a lot this year. They won at Bucky Irving, but Emeka Ogbuka and Baker Mayfield have been amazing for them.
You can frustrate Tampa with a pass rush. The Bills do happen to have that. Against Miami, they just did not have it. The scheme that Buffalo ran with Miami twice now, allowing Tua to his first read several times and then still not getting to him, I'm a little infuriated by that you sacked him zero times in two games. And the results are not surprising at that point. You have a close victory in week three, and then you lose outright in, what was it, week 10? Week 10. I don't know if Miami's offensive line is suddenly good? Question mark? It's got me questioning my sanity. There we go. Thanks, Bills. And you mentioned it, like how every AFC team has their flaw, though. Credit to New England, they beat a team with a good record again. The Bucks are the Bucks are a team that in the NFC, they are leading the South, but they're also 6-3. That's a good team in my book, I would think. As long as the Bills are 6-3, they would fall into this definition. They're injured with a lot of problems there, but the Buccaneers still are holding strong despite that. And now here you are, a pair of 6-3 teams next week. Bills, Bucks. You now need to do what New England did. You mentioned the strength of schedule, though, by the way. There's one team worse than New England, or one team that has it better than New England. The Bears at a 3-5-1. New England at 3-7-6. The sad part about Buffalo's season so far right now is that they're not far behind. They're third.
Yeah, right.
At 4-0-7.
That's why for a long time we had the one seed conversation. Was that look at the schedule. Look how bad Kansas City's playing. Baltimore. You got through them week one and then they started to really fall apart both with injuries and their record. That's why the conversation was happening. But as the year has gone on, and we're comfortably at a spot now where we can start talking about the year at large. It is not too early now, I think, to have a lot of these conversations. The Bills' likelihood of winning the AFC East is now below 40%. It's not too early to have these conversations. But you look at New England now, too, and this is why like them beating Tampa and surviving Atlanta is important. Their next games, home against the Jets, Justin Fields could not throw more than 100 yards in a win. At Cincinnati, they still won't have Joe Burrow back, and everyone can score on them. And then the Giants, who just fired Brian Daboll. And then the bye week. They have a late bye. So for them, it can be 11-2 bye week Bills for the division. That's probably what New England is looking like, is 11-2 bye week head in at home to take on the Bills for the division. It is a tough road to climb for the Bills. They've come out of worse. I mean, they should not have won the division the year Miami had it clinched until they obviously collapsed right. it with Tennessee. They've had those happen. But Drake May is better than Tua. Vrabel is better than McDaniel. And their schedule points to they should take care of business. So for me, I'm not giving up on the Bills. They're not done, in part because the AFC itself is not very good. And we're ignoring the NFC for a little while here, for a few weeks. The NFC is the NFC, but the AFC, it is a weak conference. It is very flawed. But with that, did Sunday's loss for you put a ceiling on what these Bills can do? 803-0550, the number to call. You want to give your thoughts. We've also got a lot of tweets on that. Because for me, I think it did put a ceiling on them. They can win the Super Bowl. They have Josh Allen. But I'm more hoping they can win the Super Bowl, where a few weeks ago, start of the season, they're one of the Super Bowl favorites. They should be one of the final four teams. They should, with the schedule and with how everyone else looks in the AFC, be representing the conference. Now, it more feels like they got to get a few rolls their way. They got to get a little bit of luck. Ed Oliver does come back from his bicep injury and is the player that he looked like this year. Josh Palmer comes back and does ascend into a player that the GM talked very highly of all offseason. Dalton Kincaid comes back and continues to work. It can happen, but they've put themselves in such a hole, and it is losses like to Atlanta and Miami that just makes me think, not this year. Not this year. They're too flawed. They've ignored key problems for too long. They've treated wide receiver like it's a second-class position, to the point now where they cannot reliably pass the ball, especially downfield, with the reigning MVP at quarterback.
I mean, and there's a lot of, I don't want to call it pessimism, but like caution from Bills fans is probably the nicest way to put it about them bringing in Mecole Hardman to the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, oh, great. Are we going to get more jet sweeps and bubble screens to another player? That's the kind of attitude that's going on right now. And whether it's Hardman or if it's Gabe Davis, there might need to be a change at the wide receiver group at its current standing. And you're not getting enough out of Keon Coleman. You're not using Elijah Moore enough. Curtis Samuel's barely on the field at this point, it feels like. Not enough going on from players that aren't Khalil Shakir at the wide receiver position, and Josh Palmer being hurt obviously stings a little, and it probably takes away from what the general manager had designs on.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute Dalton Kincaid is not in the game, things fall apart. And here it was again, because he gets injured against Miami and the passing attack was just getting going.
Yeah, they were finally starting to use Kincaid. And he ends that game, with like two catches for like 30 yards? Something like that?
I think it
37
was
yards? Because he had two back-to-back big plays. Because I remember just sitting there going, finally, you got your best receiving weapon involved.
Yeah, it was 37 yards on two catches.
Yeah.
So 18.5 yards per pop there. But the other part of it is you were playing catch-up the whole game.
And they're not built to do it.
There were seven plays of 20 yards or more because they had to. And it still didn't work. Which kind of goes back to Joe Brady's comments of like, oh, we could pass the ball anytime we need to. What about when you don't need to?
When you maybe should be taking advantage of a bad secondary by Miami. You can't.
When you should.
You can't.
It's not when you need to. It's when you should. When you need to is game script. The game has told you you have to do this. So it's not necessarily something where you're getting good design out of it based on play call. You're doing it because the game dictates that you have to. How about passing the ball when you want to? That's been the problem this year. And against Kansas City, they do it really well, as a matter of fact. But as we've been proven now multiple times this year, if a team sells out to stop James Cook in the run game,
Bills don't really have an off-speed pitch. They don't have a plan B.
No, I'll say it more simply. The Bills lose.
Mm-hmm. 803-0550, the number to call. Did Sunday's loss to Miami put a ceiling on this year's Bills team for you, or do you still see them as what they were to start this year, a clear Super Bowl contender? Let's go to the phones. We'll start today with Billy on the line. Billy, how we doing, man?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I don't see a problem at all. I mean, I'm disappointed in losing to these lesser teams, but, you know, I'm going to throw a different scenario at you and, you know, and go with other sports. Look, the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers just lollygagged through the regular season. The L.A. Dodgers were supposed to win 180 baseball games. They lollygagged through the season. I think what happens sometimes when you get there 3, 4, 5 years in a row, and I know this isn't a good thing to say, but it looks like this team doesn't even really want to play the regular season. When they play the two good teams, they beat them both. But it just looks like they want to get right back to the playoffs. And I think we will see this real team in the playoffs. I really see that. I'm not worried one bit, to be honest with you, because we beat two teams that have a chance to go to the Super Bowl, and we beat them quite handily. Here's the one thing that I am very upset about the last game. And, you know, I hope you guys say, listen, you're overthinking this, but guys, we're getting beat soundly by Miami. It's 30-13. It's fourth down at the end of the ball game, and we decide to kick the football? I mean, are you kidding me? Would the Kansas City Chiefs with 30 seconds left think they can score two touchdowns and win the game? We flat out lay down. Why not just go for it on fourth down? You know, if it's unsuccessful, and it's probably not going to be that, then Miami's not going to try and score another touchdown and beat us 37-13. They're just going to run the clock out and game over. Why did we kick the ball in that situation? I know it meant nothing, but it just meant that we gave up. Yeah, it was great. We landed the ball on their 2-yard line. So in the next 30 seconds, they're not going to go 98 yards and score a touchdown. My God, you have got to play the game right out. And I thought that we gave in right there and just admitted defeat. And I can never accept something like that. That's all I got, guys.
Billy, thanks for the call. You're going to hate what I say next. I hated that Josh Allen was in the game for the last 5 minutes. I thought that was pointless. He took one sack that I just thought was ridiculous.
I also don't think you're going to like what I say on this one either, Billy. Appreciate the call, though. You can't say, oh, they're just playing the string through the regular season and then get mad that they kicked the football.
They kicked the football, yeah.
You kind of can't have both in that scenario. I don't think the Bills also want to be playing the string out on the regular season. Now, I will never accuse athletes of effort unless I can very blatantly see it.
Or if they say it.
Or if they say it. Or if it's told to us. There is no way that they're trying to coast through this. Why? They're better at home.
Yeah,
they don't have a playoff win on the road mm-hmm. with Sean McDermott as the head coach. I think that's highly circumstantial because it's Kansas City almost every time. There's the Houston game where, you know, it's Allen's first time in the playoffs, and then the game that everyone should forget in the 2017 wild card against Jacksonville. Those are the other losses. But other than those, it's Kansas City. In Kansas City. And, however, while I brought up the circumstances, there are still the facts. The fact is they have not won a playoff game on the road. And if you think they're just hanging out until they can get to the playoffs here, this isn't like the NHL. There's no chance to go home if you're the 6 or the 7 seed.
I was going
to
say, I understand the feeling of bringing up baseball and the NHL and basketball, but the problem is those are much longer seasons. And yeah, like, cool, you might get game 7 at home, but these are series. Like, we're all going to go home at some point.
We're all going to play in front of the fans again.
It does get to a point of just get into the dance, you're fine. With seeding sports like football, no, you kind of want the bye week, the 1 seed. You want to have everything be at home. It's late in the year. You're tired. You're exhausted.
You want a 2 or a 3.
Yeah.
So you're not traveling.
And look, yeah, they did beat Miami, or they did beat Kansas City, and they beat Baltimore. They did not beat Baltimore soundly. They did not. that was a game that Baltimore more lost than the Bills won. And Kansas City, they get up for that game every year. There's no explanation to it other than they love playing them and they get up for it. But you can't go from Kansas City at home playing your best ball of the season. I still stand by that. That's their best game they've played this season.
It is.
And then laying the worst egg you've had all year against Miami in a close division race.
I think that speaks to the true inconsistency of this year's group.
Yeah, probably does. They'll get up for one game, and the next game...
It's not even getting up for. It's execution. It's predictability of play calls. It's... Ready? You brought this up on the overtime show, Zach, how the radio broadcast mentions it was the same play call.
The fourth down pass
that ultimately goes to Jackson Hawes. Yeah. The fourth down where Allen has to chuck that thing deep to Jackson Hawes is probably the safest play at that point because... Hey, you know what? Even if it's picked off, that's field position that you flipped. Because Miami snuffs it out because the play was the same as the one you called against Kansas City in the same exact situation. Fourth and short. You fake the tush push or whatever that play is nowadays. Ban it, by the way. And because we had another egregious false start on the Eagles that wasn't called.
Yeah, that play is gone next year.
Cannot wait for the burial of that play. But then it's snuffed out immediately to a point where now Allen's escapability is also taken out because that read is crashed.
Mm-hmm.
A defender comes crashing down in the lane that Allen's going to take to run the ball. And now Allen has to make a decision.
And the decision ultimately, we all make fun of it, but... Hawes is not the design guy on that play.
Hawes is not the design
player. He is the bail, just throw it up. It's fourth down. We'll
see what happens. I also think he's trying to find Knox.
Oh, yeah.
Who's floating down the field a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. But he throws it off his back foot.
And the ball's not going to be accurate, and somebody's going up to get it, and it's Jackson Hawes of all people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how well-read that play was because Joe Brady has a sense of predictability to his calls, be it by deployment or by scenario.
And there is a positive and a negative to that because he has openly acknowledged, like, if a play's working, we're to keep running it. Those pitch plays that they ran a few weeks ago against Carolina, they kept going and going and going and going, and Carolina wasn't stopping them. So there's a positive to that. There's also a massive negative of you just ran that play the week prior.
James Cook's coming off the field. I wonder what they're doing.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll get one more call here in this segment before our first timeout. Alan is up next. Alan, how are we doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to share a couple things, and you kind of brought it up from the 2023 season. I remember going back to that season. The Giants came to Buffalo with Tyrod Taylor and almost beat us. We were shut out the first half. You would have thought the world came to an end with Bills fans. The second, they go to New England. Mac Jones takes the team down and scores at the end of the game. People were ready to shoot McDermott and the Dorsey and the whole crew, and then we lose that game to Denver when too many men on the field. And, you know, you talk about I think it was Joe or Jeremy took a poll when they were 6-6 and lost to the Eagles on that 59 by Jake Elliott, 59-yard field goal to tie it up, to go to overtime. But 80% of the people said they would not make the playoffs. They came back and won five in a row. Yeah, people say, well, this is a little bit of a different team. They stopped throwing the Diggs. Diggs averaged three catches a game for the last five games. He was infuriated. And if you look back at that, and I think this year, we play a team coming in this Sunday, Tampa, that's injured worse than we are. I mean, they have some...
They've been wounded all year, yeah.
And they're in an easy division. I believe the Bills are going to... I say this, and I'm a confident fan. I think they're going to smoke this team. I know Baker's a runaround guy, but I think, you know, they have an easy division that they're in Tampa. But I think this week, I think this is going to be a light under the fire team, and I think this is when this team starts to move. I know that it looks like Benford's coming back this week, Teron, and I heard a comment that Palmer looks like he could be back, and Sanders. So we're going to, and maybe Espinoza clears, protocol. So I think we're going to get a little healthier. Not that, you know, that should mean a lot, but this Tampa team, I mean, you talk about injuries. Everybody says, oh, the Bills are so – Dallas, 10 guys on the IR. But I think this team's going to turn it around, and I think they're going to be everybody's vocal point on the other side when the year comes by the end of the year. They always have these laws. No, they don't always have two out of three – you know, they usually go on streaks where 4, 5, 6 in a row where they win. But I think McDermott was really ticked off, and you saw it a little bit yesterday. And I think this is going to change a little bit. And you can't go into this Tampa game. You know, they're still 5.5-point favorites. A couple guys said, oh, that spread's going to drop quickly. It's actually gone up 0.5 point. So I think we're going to see this Bills team come back strong. Take care.
Alan, thanks for the call, man. We will see. Yeah, TJ Sanders, that was the big positive news from yesterday. He's going to practice to some extent this week. The team is opening up his 21-day practice window. We will see.
I think this will light a fire under him. I think it will, like, you just got smoked by Miami. They don't get blown out a lot. You were absolutely blown out in Miami. We'll see if it does. This Tampa team, though,
there's
is too talented.
There's two angry teams playing each other.
Yeah.
That's the benefit here, is that we probably, or we better get a good football game out of this, because there's two teams that are pissed.
Yeah.
I appreciate the optimism, though, from a caller, though, as well.
And, like, it is fair to bring up 23. And we mentioned it. They were in a worse spot, 6-6 overtime.
They were in a worse spot.
To Philly, and they pulled it together.
He does mention, like, Diggs does not get the football anymore. That's because Brady's the head coach, or the offensive coordinator. Nice job, Derek. But it is because, though, sometimes, like, you know, we're here to let the anger out, you know, or even try to help you out sometimes with how things are going when it's bad. But when we're just as irritated as all of you are, you know, I appreciate, you know, if someone can give the other side of it a little bit, be like, hey, step back. You know, I think they've got this. I do appreciate it. I really do. Because sometimes we do need that.
Yeah.
Even though we're the ones talking into it, we are talking to you. And sometimes we need it too, I guess, is the way I want to say that. So thank you, Alan. I appreciate the call.
803-0550, the number to call. If you're on hold, hang on there. We'll get to you when we come back before we hit our first timeout. Let TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence intercept your heating bills. Enter now at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 toward your home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. Contest does end January 4th of 2026. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence. Powering tomorrow, comforting today. Again, the number to call, 803-0550. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Yeah, I got off to a slower start than we wanted to. Feeling like we were chasing the game, trying to play catch up a little bit there, and couldn't close the gap, quite honestly. So too many three and outs early in the game, too many second and longs, third and longs offensively. Gave up in the run game early that led to their first touchdown. And
that is Bills head coach Sean.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
McDermott from yesterday speaking with the media, and they got into a hole early, and I do not think this Bills team is built to come back from a deficit. They are built to get on you early, get into the run game, and force you to throw a lot. And when they get put in that spot, they struggle.
What a weird evolution it has been from there. But, you know, sometimes things are not all the way back yet. But you know what is? Tailgate Trivia is back. And it's presented by Total Sports Enterprises Buffalo. Listen during every Bills game for your chance to call in, answer the trivia question, and win autographed Bills merch courtesy of TSE Buffalo. That's on every Bills game day during countdown to kickoff. So have some fun. Try to get some tailgate trivia in there. As a matter of fact, we did that.
Jackson Hawes scored again against the Dolphins. He was the trivia answer, and then he scored again. Mm-hmm. It was meaningless, but he did it again.
Yes.
Good for him. 803-0550, the number to call. The big question we've got today is, following the loss on Sunday, do you believe this Bills team has a ceiling, or are they still what they were to start this year? Clear Super Bowl contenders. We'll go back to the phones here, and Jerry, who's been waiting patiently. Jerry, how are we doing, man?
Hey, good morning. The guy a couple of calls ago was funny about giving up. You do know you two touchdowns can't get you 17 points.
Right.
Ever,
yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Just what we need to be doing, down 17, trying, and another player gets hurt.
I mean, so I was saying, like, 5 minutes left in the game, I was like, why is Allen still here?
Right, right. But you know what? McDermott just hit it on the head. All three turnovers occur because we're chasing. The one in the end zone, we would have kicked the field goal. Cook and Allen trying to get extra yards turns into a fumble. The A-Chain had a nice day, but 8 of his yards are bull. They're because we crowded the line to get the ball back, and once he hits that seam, he's gone. In a normal close game, that's a 6-yard run. It is not a 32-yard touchdown or a 48-yard touchdown. Those are false yards. Sure, they calculate, but they're out of desperation, and us chasing is the reason they happen. The main reason I called, though, I think the biggest problem on this team now, and it's by availability and their ability, the core of this team, from Bernard to Oliver to Milano to Benford to Teron Johnson to Dawkins, are letting us down. Name one of those players you think is having a good year by availability or ability, and they are the core of this team.
No, Jerry, I think you're absolutely right, man. Thanks for the call. You know, funny enough, the one guy that was really like exceeding, I think, maybe people's expectations this year is also a guy who's barely played. So he does fit into this, but it's at Oliver. Oliver comes in with, he's notoriously a core player that underachieves. He's too inconsistent.
Right.
But this year, barring injuries, he was phenomenal for them.
It's easy to say that every game he played in, you notice.
But to the availability point of Jerry's call,
he only played 3 games.
He's only played 3 games. Michael Hoyt only played 7 quarters. I think you could also throw Josh Allen in here as well, as he's not having an equal season to his MVP year last year. Now, to that point, though, and there was a caller yesterday for Shelton the Bulldog, and I think he makes a really good point. The worst thing Allen maybe could have done for his career is winning MVP with last year's roster, with last year's scheme. That maybe having this year, which is still very good. Like, that's the word. He's still very good.
And yet it's so frustrating.
It's so frustrating. Why? Well, the talent's not really there. He's forcing too many things. He's turning the ball over more. The Bills were perfect last year on offense, realistically. The defense was getting takeaways. They had short field positions. And the Bills weren't turning the ball over. So it was constantly, they were just able to have short fields, take advantage of teams, and bully them. And they had to be perfect to do it, running these 10 to 15 play drives to score, where this year, they're not getting as many takeaways, and they're turning the ball over more. And that is now leading to them having to force things on like 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8. They're not having any kind of downfield threat, so all the passing attack is pushed in. The safeties don't really have to do too much in terms of defending a field stretcher. I don't even want to say a speed guy, but just somebody that can do it. Guys like Justin Jefferson, I would not say is a speedster, same with Jamar Chase, but they're both great deep ball threats. So you have to defend that. You have to acknowledge that is going to be a thing. They don't have that. But Allen, to the caller's point, his fumble comes from he's just trying to get more yards. Jalen Hurts had the same thing happen to him last night. Just trying to get more yards. Someone comes in, punches it out. It's a problem. James Cook, he's getting more yards. They're fighting to get back in the game. It's a fumble. His less so in terms of fighting to get more yards. His is just guy comes up from behind him.
He tries to elude it, and there's a guy, great right. pursuit.
Allen is much more of the, he is clearly trying to put the team on his back.
Which is
kind
of funny because he even has 2 hands on the football.
Yeah.
It's the perfect punch.
But I wholeheartedly agree with Jerry's call. It is core guys not living up to the expectations. Not even living up to the expectations, just meeting the ones they've set.
Meeting the ones they've set.
That's why a lot of these guys got extensions.
And that was just going to get there. Or meeting the extensions that they were just given. And it is becoming a little bit more of a problematic scenario that I look at 3 of those 5 extensions and I think you're not doing what you're being paid to do, and they're all on the defensive side of the football. The ones you can go ahead and say, yeah, you're worth every penny right now is James Cook and maybe Khalil Shakir.
I can at least point to Shakir and say, I want to see them use him more.
I want to see you used more
down the
field.
He's not been as efficient. I think a lot of it is just how many yards does he get beyond the line of scrimmage? They just don't use him in that role anymore. I think in part because everyone's dropped in on the offense. No one's stretching the field. So it's all clumped together. And so the best way to get him the ball is these bubble screens, is these quick hit. It's not a pretty offense. It works at times because they have an all-pro MVP-level quarterback and they have an all-pro-level running back. That's why it is able to work at times. And others, like we've mentioned, when you stop James Cook, boy, does it look painful. Let's go back to the phones here. Kenny is up next. Kenny, how are we doing, man?
Oh, this is Tim.
Oh, Tim, sorry about that. Tim, how are you doing, man?
No worries. I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys. Mm-hmm. I just want to get your thoughts here. You know, I really, truly, and you know, the timing of this is impeccable, but I really think it has nothing to do with the whole Brian Daboll thing getting fired. I just want to know your thoughts. Do you think that Joe Brady is coaching for a job here for the remainder of the year? Because I know that, you know, he's some favorited for at like some college stops and things like that. You know, to be honest with you, I went back and looked because I wasn't entirely sure, but I totally forgot that he actually got fired from Carolina with like five games left under Matt Rhule. The offense just doesn't look great. I know they're scoring a lot of points, and to your point right before I got on, like if James Cook is clicking, this offense looks totally different, but just the spacing and everything looks really, really hard. And I just remember under Daboll, like, we would have guys running down the field, and then you'd get that Cole Beasley, like, deep dig route that was just, like, always available, and Josh always seemed more comfortable. I don't know, guys. I'm throwing a lot at you here, but is he coaching for a job here? Because I don't think that they would hesitate to make a move after the season, not necessarily Daboll, but just getting some fresh eyes in here, right. And your quarterback looks depressed, man. Like, figure it out. Thanks.
Yeah. Tim, thanks for the call, man. You know, I've been saying this with Brady, maybe not necessarily coaching for his job. I didn't think he was having like a Bobby Slowick type year. And if you don't get that reference, Slowick 2 years ago was the belle of the ball in terms of these young OCs coming up. C.J. Stroud in his rookie year made him look incredible. Year two, it's such a regression. He's fired at the end of the year. I don't know if that's Brady. However, there are, for me, and I talked about this a few times now on different shows, but I think there's too many openings for him that I think he could be a real favorite for. Penn State, LSU being the two major college jobs, there will be more NFL jobs that open up. I think he could go. I will say, though, the longer the season goes on, and if there is a real regression, if this team all of a sudden winds up in the wild card and they lose and they don't even win a playoff game this year.
And it's the context that the offense is the reason.
I could absolutely see that happening. This team also fired Ken Dorsey in the middle of the season when all of the numbers did look good, but the eye test was telling you, oh boy, this is a struggle. The numbers looked fine.
And yet, oddly enough, we're at that point where, say, the offense continues its struggles through the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We've already gotten our public vote of confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, every time McDermott talks, I'm more curious now every time he speaks because, man, he is veiling some things. I mean, he is going non-answers for a lot of stuff that, to me at least, points to, oh, it's the more negative answer, but
you're protecting publicly.
And that's the job of the head coach. The head coach should not be throwing everyone under the bus. This is not soccer. Soccer coaches can do that and do it often.
You are football not John Tortorella. Not so you don't need to hear it
but
in the NFL.
Even the stuff yesterday, Matt Parrino, who's friend of the show, friend of the station, asked about Keon Coleman and the effort stuff. McDermott, you know, acknowledged that, you know, it's not always the best, but it's handled internally. You know, when it needs to be addressed, it is addressed.
When he knows. I let him know.
Yep.
If I'm not satisfied.
On the postgame, do you think this is a championship roster? I love these players. I love this team. Okay, that is not a yes or a no, but it is way closer to a no.
That is, you're protecting your guys and you're trying to do what you need to do there. And I think that that is something that most coaches will do publicly.
Yeah.
It is, however, getting to a point where, yeah, I am starting to wonder how much of a philosophical difference there is between the head coach and the front office.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Real quick, though, on Daboll.
Yep.
I'm cool if he comes in as a consultant, you know, senior offensive assistant. He may want to do that. He may also want to just take the season, collect himself, and get ready for the coaching cycle. Because I think he will be a hot name for an OC for a number of teams. And there have always been rumblings that him and McDermott don't get along super well. I am still maintaining, and Sunday didn't change anything for me, if McDaniel was fired in Miami, that's who I want as an OC. Because for me, I think they need new blood brought into the coaching staff. Too much. They go back to the same old coaches and the same old players. Bring someone in with new ideas, with different ideas. He was not a good head coach. He is not a good head coach. He's not fired yet, McDaniel. But he was a very good offensive coordinator. And I think the players that they have right now, Josh Allen, James Cook, I think they can really make that work with McDaniel year one. Bringing him in also pushes more towards you need receiver help to run this offense. Let's do it. I think they could be a really good marriage. Daboll, though, also could be a good one. I have less love for that because it would be going to the same old, same old. Old guy got fired, we'll bring him back in. Old guy gets cut, we'll bring him back in.
I will say yes and no on that because Dable is brought in as an outside voice.
He is.
Originally.
He is, yep.
And I would say technically he is again.
He would be, but this would be...
It is hiring back into the tree.
He would still be good. I wouldn't complain. It's just I would have less juice for it because it would sort of fit the template for them.
It would fit the template for them, but it's also, hey, I know what...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm working with here.
Yeah.
And that goes to both parties. The team, right. And Dable. Dable can go in and go, I know what I'm working with here.
Right. 803-0550, the number to call. We do have primetime players come up at the top of the hour. Also, of course, going to keep taking your calls on if you think this Bills team has hit a ceiling following their loss on Sunday, or are they still, or should they still be considered a clear Super Bowl contender like they were at the start of the year? Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on a Tuesday. Happy Veterans Day. Honor all the troops out there. Today's show brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Join Sal Capaccio and Matt Bove for a live recording of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast at Batavia Downs Gaming and Hotel on Tuesday, November 18th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Don't miss this upcoming events at Batavia Downs, including Thurman Thomas Tailgate Party on November 20th and the Batavia Downs Bar Crawl on November 28th. Visit BataviaDownsGaming.com. 803-0550, the number to call. We've got only a few minutes here, so we'll get one more call at least here before our next break. Steve is up next. Steve, how we doing, man?
Hey, guys. I know Joe Brady is coming under a little bit of fire, and these guys do have to do what they have to do with the tools that they have. But, you know, for offensive success, I mean, isn't this just a really middle group of guys, especially with the positions he wants to utilize? Like, we don't have a 1-2 punch at running back. We don't have Sonic and Knuckles like they do in Detroit.
Right.
And even for tight ends, you know, that's what he wants to use. Who do we have? It's not like we have Tucker Kraft out there. We've got a high-end Mike Gesicki and Kincaid, and then Dalton Knox, who's probably better years behind him, and then a rookie that still, you know, we're not sure how much he can even catch the ball. So that's really what I think with Brady. He just probably doesn't have the tools he needs to run the offense that he wants to run.
Steve, I think there's a really fair point to bring up. It's something I've somewhat wrestled with for most of the years. Like, how much blame do we really put on Brady with the confuddling amount of times this offense kind of goes into the gutter? The problem Brady runs into is when he took over, receivers sort of took a backseat. When they had Diggs, when they had Gabe Davis. So while, yeah, I don't disagree. I think he has a very middling group of skill position players outside of James Cook and maybe Kincaid.
I want to be more particular with that.
Mm-hmm.
You said receivers take a backseat. Boundary receivers.
Boundary receivers take a backseat.
Yes. But Shakir has been heavily featured over the past few years.
But it is something to bring up of, like, how much talent do they really have? I think it's fair to bring up the tight ends as well. Kincaid is a good tight end. I think he's ascending, but he's often hurt. Knox, the best years are probably behind him. He's now much more used as a complement in that room rather than, you know, a full course meal. And Hawes, is a rookie, and we're not sure if he can catch or not. We're still figuring that out with him as he goes. He's not really using the receiving game. He is a blocking tight end for them 90% of the time.
I will say, if you want to be encouraged by the numbers, he has caught 8 of 11 targets.
That does work. That does work. that will help. But yeah, I think that's a fair thing to bring up. The problem is, and to Derek's point, he seemingly doesn't like using boundary receivers, and when he has to, their numbers go down, and it becomes an inefficient way to run the offense. Look at Diggs' last few games here in Buffalo as the most glaring example. It's why I'm not asking for him to be fired, but why I'm already thinking about maybe his replacement. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll have primetime players coming up in the next hour. We'll also keep taking your calls as well. Here on a Tuesday, the snow has stopped. That is maybe a positive sign for the rest of the day. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, this is WGR.
The good old days, you know, the throwbacks of yore where you could trust, you know, the internet name. Just because, you know, that is pretty detailed. You know, I do live in that area, but, I mean, AI, right?
Was that you?
I live in that area. AI is real. That's what I got for you.
Oh, come on. Own it, dude.
That's so awesome. Nope, that's my favorite non-answer that's ever been given.
No.
I live near that area. AI is real. That's so good.
Nope.
Mike McDaniel there, Dolphins head coach, on a – what has now become a viral clip of him, like, potentially leaving a club and a fan caught him.
Wear it.
That's so funny, though.
Wear it that you trolled Bills fans.
That's so funny.
Like, you did the shirt. That didn't work. This did. Own it.
Right, but that might be why he's not doing it. He's like, I tried some heavy trolling, and it really bit me. I'm going to lay low.
That's how...
After a win in a season, he may end up being fired. So that's where it's like,
no, pros and cons. Take whatever high moments you can at that point.
That's my favorite non-answer ever.
Oh.
I live in that area, and AI is real. It's so good. 803-0550, the number to call. Hour number two here on a Tuesday of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point. So, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here. Today's show, of course, is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It is a Tuesday. It is 11 o'clock. And so with that, we'll have a little primetime performers for week number 10. We've got pretty much all of our sports back. Baseball's gone.
So unfortunately.
We're not going to have any baseball
after
players.
That World Series.
I know. One of the better World Series in recent memory. So good. Dodgers do win it, but... So
it still had everything.
Yamamoto being amazing, Guerrero being awesome, Ohtani having his moments as well. Just so good. But we all know we got college basketball back as well. Got a great night of games as well tonight. Multiple top 25 matchups. UB at DePaul. That game's going to be on ESPN Plus and the Bet 1520.
Don't talk to me. So he's number two now.
Good times, good times. But we'll start with our honorable mentions. Do you want to start? Do you want me to start? How do you want to?
I'll kick things off here, and it's mostly because of the fact that two of my three honorable mentions are with division rivals.
Oh, good, good, good.
So I feel dirty.
I do have one of them, so we'll probably have the
same one. In a weekend where everyone but the Bills won in the AFC East, Travion Henderson.
14
carries, 147 yards, 2 touchdowns against Tampa Bay, a offense that has shown that they can't really run the ball that effectively. And, all of a sudden, Henderson's the starter today.
Yeah, because people were wondering, like, why they weren't using this guy that they drafted
this
highly.
Dude,
he had all the potential.
10 yards per carry on 147 yards and 2 touchdowns in the win against Tampa Bay, giving Drake May some much-needed balance.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good performance from him. And, again, finally using him. I know there's a lot of people in fantasy that drafted him high and have been waiting for that kind of game.
And there's no way they've started them for this.
No. I think we have the same guy here, so I think we can both just talk about him. Devon Achane. No, you do not have Devon Achane.
I'm salty.
There you go. Well, Devon Achane, I do have him on there. 174, 2 scores, plus he had 6 catches for 51 yards. He's been a weapon for Miami the last few matchups for the Bills. But it's a weapon overall, but he has been the guy that's inched them closer and closer and closer to eventually getting a win over the Bills. And then, you know, the floor fell under him, and he was a big part of that. He was incredible on Sunday.
I will say, I think it's also because of the fact that I have multiple running backs on here.
Oh, right.
Like, okay. I'm not putting a third.
That's fair.
But my other division foe is it's the New York Jets special teams. 2 return touchdowns courtesy of Isaiah Williams and Kanate Nwangwu as they beat Cleveland in a game where Justin Fields is not throwing the football.
I think 97% of his passing yards came from one Breece Hall play.
He just is not throwing the football.
I don't know if the math's correct there, but I'm going to lean into it.
Still doesn't have a pick.
Still, he doesn't?
I don't think so.
Oh, my goodness. That'd be incredible if he didn't have a pick yet.
I'm going to confirm that while you go on to your next point.
The longer this year goes on, the less faith I have Justin Fields as a good football
player. But also, no, the special teams with the two return touchdowns there helping beat Cleveland is a big deal. Oh, he does have an interception now, finally. Oh, there it is. There it is.
Well, that's upsetting.
I mean, leave it to Cleveland to finally pick Justin Fields and lose.
There you go. My other honorable mention, I have two more. One of them, though, just real quick here, Danielle Hunter. 3.5 sacks for Houston in the win over Jacksonville. Game was super ugly. You got a backup quarterback in Houston, Davis Mills. Defense got to give you everything they have. That is an incredible unit led by guys like Stingley. And, of course, you also have Will Anderson. But Danielle Hunter leads the way on Sunday. 3.5 sacks for him.
I'm going to the ice for my last honorable mention.
Okay.
And I'm going to do this a couple times, actually, today.
Yeah, Macklin, he's had some performers.
Macklin Celebrini.
Oh, yeah.
San Jose is on a 3-game win streak. They've gotten points in 5 of their last 6 at a 5-0-1 clip. Celebrini peak amongst that, the game that they lose in that, a shootout loss, he actually gets no points. So he's kind of been helping carry San Jose from the brink. They got off to a terrible start this year. And Celebrini's 5th in the NHL in scoring. But he had 6 points in the 3-game win streak right now for the San Jose Sharks that is still ongoing. So give me Macklin Celebrini there at the honorable mention as we head to number 5.
Well, my last honorable mention real quick here, Matthew Stafford.
Yes.
I think he needs more flowers just as we go on. He now leads the NFL in touchdown passes. He threw 4 more in the win over San Francisco, 280 yards. The man we were worried couldn't play this year because of his back.
Right.
He basically does not take part in training camp. He might be playing his best football this year. He has dealt with injuries at the wide receiver position, Puka Nacua going down. They don't really have much of a running game with Kyren Williams, and yet he is just inevitable. 25 touchdowns, I think only 3 picks. He leads the NFL in touchdown passes. And if they win the NFC West, I think that should be your MVP. Right now, I mean, we've got weeks to go. But if they win the NFC West, I think that should be your MVP. And his second half of his career arc, I think everyone kind of thought there was Hall of Fame talent in Detroit. It was just Detroit. And so, like, every time they made the playoffs, it was a huge moment. And any big season was just, oh, my God, he did with Detroit. Since getting to the Rams, if he can win a Super Bowl, get, you know, a Pro Bowl, a 2 more Pro Bowls, an All-Pro, and an MVP, and maybe even a second Super Bowl, where do you put him all time with quarterbacks? When you have that context of Detroit, then with a good organization with the Rams, one of my favorite players to watch, and he's having maybe his best year. So Matthew Stafford, an honorable mention for me.
And Matthew Stafford should be paid attention to with the MVP a little bit more than I think that he's giving the credit due there. All right, number 5. First of all, I refuse to put anybody from that 4 o'clock slate in here because those were all just terrible blowouts that just like, oh, dear God, make it stop. All of it was ugly. Number 5, Davis Mills.
Yeah, the backup quarterback for Houston.
The comeback win against Jacksonville, he is 292 yards passing, 2 touchdowns in that game against the Jaguars and helps kind of keep Houston's season alive, realistically, because of the fact that Houston, they're sitting there at 4-5. They're a game off of Jacksonville now.
And they do sit just behind Kansas City. So they're very much in the hunt.
Like right Baltimore, now. Both of those teams they have less chances, but it is now a non-zero. You lose that game, you fall to 3-6, you're probably forgotten at this point.
You're done.
But now Houston's still alive. It's a harder road than what Baltimore has, for example, which is just win the paltry AFC North. But Houston has a shot here to stay alive. Obviously, there are a couple teams in the way there. But now you're sitting there at the 9, and you have a chance.
Yeah. Number 5 for me, we go to college hoops. Nicholas Avdalis, a Greek freshman for Virginia Tech. So I know WBEN's Joe Beamer is going to love this.
You just played Mad Libs.
Yeah, 6'9 point guard from Greece, freshman for Virginia Tech, 33 points, 5-for-8 from 3, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, plus a steal and a block in a 107-101 overtime win over Providence on Saturday. He is one of the better freshmen in a loaded freshman class across the board in college basketball, and he sort of announced himself he really wasn't supposed to be in college hoops this year. He wanted to enter the draft, wasn't getting more love than a second-round pick, so he ends up going to Virginia Tech because his agent and the assistant head coach at Virginia Tech know each other, and now he just looks like a demon out there. 6'9 point guard. He is all 6'9, too. That is not a BS height. He is all 6'9, and he has got really that European shooting stroke where it's just all fundamentals and it looks perfect. He is a fun player to watch. I think Virginia Tech's back in action either tomorrow or on Thursday, but he is going to be must-watch television. So number five for me, also his nickname, Neo Avdalis.
All right. Number four, I'm going back to the ice. If I asked you right now, as a standby person, how do you think the Anaheim Ducks are doing this year?
Well, I found out this morning I didn't think they'd be any good. Turns out,
And the thing is that one of the answers I got from a friend was, they're doing just fine this year, aren't they? No, just fine is not the answer here. They're atop the Pacific at 11-3-1, unconscious. Why are they doing this? Well, one of the big reasons, Leo Carlson. Carlson is on a 10-game point streak, 7-game win streak for Anaheim, and Carlson has been on a tear. His last four games, 5 goals, 4 assists. He has been a dominant factor for them. And again, 10 games point streak, that's unconscious on its own. The Anaheim Ducks suddenly becoming one of the darlings of the NHL early on in the season. And you got to look at Carlson as one of the reasons why. 10 goals, 15 assists, and 25 points overall on the year for their top center.
Number four for me, I'm going to go back to football, Jahmyr Gibbs. I do have another running back on here, but Gibbs continues to be just that workhorse for the Lions. He's an incredible talent. Part of that 4 o'clock window where it was a lot of 40 to 20 scores, but Gibbs, 142 and 2 touchdowns on the ground, and then 3 for 30 and another touchdown through the air. It also have Jared Goff have a great day as well. Jameson Williams gets over 100 yards. But Gibbs, and this is my thing, and this is where like I always get a little... I go back and forth with the Bills. A lot of these great teams have elite run games. They have an elite quarterback. Problem is the Bills have just ignored the wide receiver position where other teams like Detroit simply haven't. They have talent in that room, and it allows them to just do anything they want on offense. When they are humming, Detroit, very few teams look better than them. Over the last few years when they are humming, they look incredible. Jahmyr Gibbs, a big part of that. So he's number four for me.
All right, so number three, we have an interesting dilemma here. From number three to number one on both of our lists, we do know this.
Yeah.
They are all the same players.
Yes.
So I think we just talk about them now.
Right. So yeah, if we want to, I'll start with who's three for me, but I know he's much higher for you. It's Nathan MacKinnon.
And MacKinnon, I've got at number one here, but it is 9 points in his last 2 games. How I just pointed out, Carlson had 9 points in his last 4. MacKinnon went ahead and took that and said, nah, man.
Both of them are wins, and he continues to be a guy. I joked about it with you off air. He was a guy that couldn't break the 100-point barrier for a while, and then once he did, he has just smashed through it. He leads the league in points now by, I think, 5, and Colorado. I mean, they're right back to being one of the best and brightest teams in the league. And he's a major part of that.
And like how I'd mentioned how San Jose was 5-0-1 in their last 6 games. Same with Colorado. 5-0-1, and a lot of that has to do with one of the best players in the National Hockey League in Nathan MacKinnon. They had themselves a little bit of a rut for a week, and it looks like they've righted that ship because they lose 4 in a row. They get points in 3 of those 4 losses. Must be nice. Well, actually, wait, what am I talking about? That's what the Sabres did. It's the winning that comes after it,
unfortunately. It's the winning. It's the winning.
That's the part that must be nice. And they've won 5 of their last 6. The other one was an OT loss. MacKinnon, though, is atop the league once again in scoring. He is... what do I say here?
He's one of the best players of his generation. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl stop him from being the best player of his generation.
Yes, and there's a lot to it. And I do think that Bedard and Celebrini are going to say something about this as well now that they've broken through. But there's a reason that Carlson, Celebrini, Bedard are not leading the league in points right now. And it is because Nathan MacKinnon went on an unconscious tear against Edmonton and Vancouver.
Yeah.
A total of 4 goals, 5 assists for MacKinnon in his last 2 games.
And so he's number one for you, number three for me. Number two, we have the same player, DeMarcus Lawrence.
anytime you get two defensive touchdowns, you're going to be put up here.
Yep, two fumble recoveries for a touchdown. I mean, Sam Darnold only has to throw 12 passes for Seattle, in part because they were up so fast and so much.
And in part because
of Dexter Lawrence having those two fumble recoveries for touchdowns.
DeMarcus Lawrence going on and just like, yeah, that was insane to see how quickly they went up. And it kind of ruined my exclusion league where it's a week to week. You pick a player, and once you pick them, they're done. Unfortunately, I picked two Seattle players.
Oof.
They didn't do much.
No, because they really didn't need to do much. They were on top fast. DeMarcus Lawrence playing a big role in that. And then number one for me, number three for you.
It's Jonathan Taylor.
The reason the Colts are good, it's Jonathan Taylor.
Again, 32 carries. I had said last week they should be giving him the ball more.
Oh, well, they did it.
32 carries will do that. 244 yards, three touchdowns against Atlanta, and including sealing it. Yeah, the guy is, especially because you're seeing Daniel Jones kind of turning into a pumpkin a little bit as of late.
They gave away the two first-round picks for Sauce Gardner, who, by the way, almost had an interception in his debut game.
That was a really good read.
But like, they gave away those picks, and immediately it's, oh, he looked really bad against Pittsburgh, and he didn't look good against Atlanta. He took a number of just Looney Tunes-level sacks. It's Taylor's performance that gets him the win in overtime. He also does have three catches for 42 yards to go along with that rushing performance. I think he's running away with Offensive Player of the Year. He's putting up LT-like numbers. And, yeah, when you do that, your quarterback can just be okay, and you're going to be one of the best teams in the NFL.
It's also becoming he needs to be in conversations about the MVP. If the Colts are staying up here, it is because, especially with how Daniel Jones has kind of toned down on how he had the rocket start to his season.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that has dissipated. Taylor has not.
Yeah, Taylor has not. And you know what? On that MVP conversation, we can maybe go into this, you know, as the weeks go on. He's already passed, I think, Saquon Barkley in touchdowns last year.
He has 15 in week 10.
If he gets to 2,000 yards and continues this touchdown run here, I think it almost becomes you need to, and I do mean this, you need to change the award and just say it's only for quarterbacks.
Yeah. If he doesn't win it,
you need to change how we talk about it.
And the Colts are the one seed?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would turn into, it's just best quarterback.
Let's take the veil off. It's best quarterback. No one even discussed running back. Let's move on. If he hits 2,000 yards and hits like 31 touchdowns.
I don't think he's going to get to 31, but he'll.
Total.
Oh, yeah.
Remember,
actually,
total touchdowns.
Mind.
That's where he's getting to the LaDainian Tomlinson numbers. If he gets around there.
He's not really the biggest receiving option in touchdowns. He has two. But I would imagine, let's say, he finishes with like 26 touchdowns on the ground alone, because that's where I'd call his pace at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at maybe 28 total touchdowns, maybe 29. That's still insane work.
Yeah. And I think he would have to have a serious look.
And they need MVP. Him in order to keep winning the way that they do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's our primetime performers. We'll be putting those up on socials here in the next few minutes or so if you want to see those back. But we're going to take a quick time out here. 803-0550, the number to call. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get you when we come back. The big topic of today, did the loss on Sunday lead you to think there's a ceiling for this Bills team? Or do you still see them as what they were to start the year, a clear Super Bowl contender? We've been hearing a lot of your thoughts. We'll get to more of your calls and your tweets as well when we come back. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, this is WGR.
He knows if I'm not satisfied, man. Just like any player, it's fair that you're asking about it. I can promise you it gets addressed when it isn't where it needs to be. There are times like any player or any performer where it's exactly where it needs to be, and there are times when it's not, and then we have to address it to get it hopefully where it needs to be. So it's addressed. It's been good at times, and other times it can improve for sure.
Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott from yesterday in his meeting with the media talking about Bills wide receiver Keon Coleman, who we took a call about an hour ago or so mentioning, you know, key players not meeting expectations.
Jerry, yep.
Yeah, Jerry. Didn't even mention Keon Coleman going into his second year, and especially after the training camp he got and a lot of the good publicity he was getting, understandably so,
right.
for his stacking big practices and stuff like that in camp, it looked like, okay, here's the ascension. No, it has not arrived at all. And to be fair,
we failed at the preseason pledge.
Yes, we did. But I'm at a point with Coleman. And it doesn't help that, like, when McDermott does some of these non-answers, I'm not judging, I'm just...
observing.
Yeah, observing. I mean, the Waddle report. How do we know he maybe wasn't offered in that? Could have been. I mean, at least with the Jets. That's for Quinn and Williams, but the Jets also wanted young players as well. They don't just want the picks, they wanted players. They get Mozzie Smith, they get A.D. Mitchell in some of those returns. Maybe Miami's like, yeah, give us Keon. It'll be a cheap contract. We can take that on. We'll get Waddle off our books, and we'll get your pick. That'll be great for us. I don't know. It's just something I've thought about, where because he is on the field more than any other receiver. And to many observers, you would not even notice that. He really just blocks. He had a touchdown against Miami. I will grant him that. It was a deep ball. Looked nice. Kind of meant nothing. Because for most of the time, it feels like he is just kind of jogging out there, especially on those plays where Allen is becoming Josh Allen and he's scrambling around. A lot of people noticed it. It's why Matt Parrino asked the question. Many people were noticing on social media that there's some, at times, lackadaisical effort from Coleman. And you can't have that in your second-year receiver, where that's where they put the draft capital for that position.
That is the investment they made.
Yeah, it may not be the guy anyone really wanted at the time, but they did address it. The problem is he has not been a hit even slightly, and maybe more to that problem is that he's become sort of what everyone thought he'd be. Can't really get open, probably better as an inside slot. Here you go. And that's what he is. It's tough. It's tough. You can't say they haven't tried helping out the offense. Kincaid, Coleman, Cook, all in recent years, they have done that. They're not getting the hits. Coleman is the biggest affront to that.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too. I do think there should have been more of an investment into the position through younger upside, but it's that you're not getting the hits. And when you say it like that, I do think that that expands even further into the free agency acquisitions as of late as well. Like Josh Palmer, before his injury, still really wasn't popping off.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, like you look at years past, like Deonte Hardy or...
Trent Sherfield
or
Emmanuel Sanders, you get about a half a year out of him.
Well, even I'm talking more of the last few years,
mm-hmm.
and those are the ones that I mean,
Curtis Samuel,
exactly. Like you threw money around with the idea that like, oh, underutilized player might be able to benefit here.
He's playing with Josh Allen; he'll have a career year, right?
And even looking back at two different coordinators, Dorsey and Brady is the coordinator for the end of 23.
Mm-hmm.
But still, under Joe Brady, it has not worked either there. And I'm starting to really become curious about the OC, what it means for boundary receivers, mostly because none of them wow you at this point anymore.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We've been connected to our fans all morning, and that is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com, and we're going to continue to do that and go to the phones here, and we will start off this segment with Ken on the line. Ken, how we doing? Ken, are you there? Nope, Ken's not there. That's a shame. Let's go back to the phones. Frank is with us. Frank, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I'm a longtime Buffalo fan. I live in Wyoming, University of Wyoming alum.
Oh, followed fantastic.
Josh a long time. My comment is mainly about Sean McDermott. I mean, I have no axe to grind against him. He may be a great guy, a great man. But I think that he plays the game to not lose rather than playing the game to win. And that's two different coaching philosophies. You compare... he never rolls the dice, in my opinion. And he has a quarterback who has tremendous talents, as we all know. And I think that permeates that philosophy. A team takes on the persona of the coach. And I think Buffalo is more of a reactive type of team. They don't want to go out and dictate. They don't want to go out and be proactive and force other teams to react to what they want to do. Sure, you run the ball, but you guys earlier talked about how mundane Brady's offense is. And I think to the average person, I'll bet that the majority of people watching that Miami game closely who are fairly attuned to football could guess when Buffalo was going to throw the ball or run the football. It's just very vanilla. And I think that Sean may be a great personality, a great players type of coach. But you compare him to Spagnuolo or to Andy Reid, there's just no cleverness. There's no deception in Buffalo's offense. And I think you guys know, too, that professional athletes, sure, you get somebody who has burning speed like a Tyreek Hill, but there aren't 10 of those guys in the league. And, you know, for the most part, a guy who's a run-of-the-mill receiver versus somebody who is great receiver maybe is a half a step type of difference in top-end speed. But my point is I'm not trying to tear Sean McDermott down, but it's just that it's just blasé, quite honestly. And I'm not trying to be cruel here, but it's just not even entertaining to watch Buffalo play anymore.
No, Frank, I can understand that. And you mentioned like the, you know, kind of more reactionary and stuff like that, not pushing the agenda. I think that's been true this year. We've seen the fourth down numbers go back towards a little more conservative, where for years McDermott had really kind of squashed the narrative as being, you know, oh, he's conservative, he doesn't want to go forward on fourth. No, he for 4 or 5 years was one of the more aggressive. He's not Dan Campbell, but he's certainly not Mike Tomlin, who is terrified of the idea of going
forward.
He's
not even Sean McVay.
No.
In that sense, where McVay is seen as like one of the more forward-thinking coaches. McDermott is far more aggressive than even McVay is.
Yeah.
He's probably, I'd call, like your top 10. He's a top 10 coach when it comes to aggressiveness on fourth down and having faith in the offense to do it.
This year, the numbers have gone down, though.
Now, he mentions reactionary. I do think that McDermott is reacting to a lack of faith in the coordinator.
Yeah, I don't. Listening to McDermott, really the Carolina game was eye-opening for me. They won by 31 points.
Right.
95% of coaches would have taken the passing game questions and spit them back in your face.
Right.
And pointed to the running back that had 200 yards and the 31-point victory and said, why would I care about that? Wasn't needed. What Joe Brady said wasn't needed. We can throw the ball when we want to throw the ball. Today, that was not the case. We won running
the ball. As a matter of fact, the OC was dismissive about it.
Right. The head coach, though, in both the post game and his Monday press conference with the media, couldn't wait to bring up how disappointed he was in the passing game and how much they needed more. McDermott, years, has talked about not losing the fastball.
And that's
the receivers.
Where I think that there might be this like difference.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a disconnect.
And I think this is where I do wonder if there has been a bit of an evolution of Sean McDermott, where he is more of the delegator, the head coach, and I think he is kind of seeing it a little bit. He has had to take the reins again on the defense, helping out Bobby Babich, being a little bit more of a joint thing, as he has said. But I do wonder if the head coach, voicing the same concerns that a lot of us seem to have.
Your concerns are my concerns, an exact quote from him.
I'm wondering if it's a bit of a fallacy to say, oh, this is the offense McDermott wants. He's very publicly stating, nah, man.
It's not what he wants.
Keep my name out your mouth.
But again, I think this is where it does frustrate some fans, and I can understand the frustration.
It's because McDermott's been here since 2017.
Well, he's been here since 2017, and he won't throw anyone under the bus. He's not outright saying, yeah, Keon's not getting open. Josh Palmer's not doing anything for me before his injury.
As a matter of fact,
he's
Brian
not
Dable.
Doing it. Right.
Hey, have you considered it? Great guy.
Yeah, right. Great guy.
Great dude. Knows his stuff. We're not thinking about it at this time. Also known as, I know Joe Brady's going to get offensive or he's going to get head coaching interviews.
I'm not going to burden him.
If I suddenly hire Brian Dable back in here, those jobs are gone.
Well, offensive assistant would be fine. I mean, because that's just, you're bringing in a former head coach.
That's still, you know, publicly undermining
it could, yeah.
The offensive coordinator, and enough teams looking for somebody might go, okay, they don't believe in him. Why should I interview him for a head coaching job?
I'm telling you, man, I think it's the college route for him. Because college, even then, LSU, will not care. They won't care at all. Nick Saban was a tire fire at Miami, and Alabama
he was also
like,
Nick Saban
we'll
at LSU.
We'll bring him in. I know, but that's the thing. Joe Brady was Joe Brady at LSU.
But he was only the passing game coordinator.
But he is the architect of that unbelievable offense. He's the guy that got all the credit for it. And LSU also is going to pay all of their money to Brian Kelly. It sounds like he's not going to get any of that the lesser buyout. It sounds like it's going to be that $50 million buyout. So it might be more of a, yeah, okay, we'll bring in the coordinator that maybe has some warts, but he knows the fan base. He knows the alumni. He knows the boosters. I think it's college for him. But, I think McDermott has been, I don't want to say a joy to listen to this year. That's not really the right way to
put
it.
He's been more interesting to listen to this year
because it seems like he really does fit with what a lot of fans are saying, but he's going to get the brunt of the criticism. Understandably so.
Because you're a head coach, you wear it. That is going to happen,
and it should happen. It's your team. You know, you're the guy that kind of has somewhat okayed a lot of these decisions. Brady coming in and getting more to the run. You know, people have for years wondered, is he the reason why they draft so highly on defense? Is because he really is running the drafts, Bean doesn't actually. No, I think it's further from that. I think that they had needs on defense, but you have a general manager who is happy to kind of put his neck out of the line to kind of not value wide receivers, not highly as much as maybe everybody else, right? It's not that they don't value the position. Bean did want to go out there and put his neck out there for Josh Palmer after his appearance with Jeremy and Joe. But that's kind
of... It's also the fact that he went on a little victory tour, so to say.
The media tour afterwards, you know, Pat McAfee and what have you.
There's the Bills embedded about it.
Yeah.
Starting it off with that. Like, cool.
And again, you're not going to get a team who is a Super Bowl favorite that is going to start fires in the building. I think that's a big part of it. You're just not going to get that when... I mean, look what their Hard Knocks was. It was kumbaya. It was everything's great. Look how awesome this is. We're back. Who cares what happened last year? Let's ride. We never even got an episode of James Cook and the contract extension and negotiations and the holdout. Nothing. They're a Super Bowl contender. You don't want to be the guy that burns it all down because you're a little upset. Because ultimately, they did go to the AFC Championship last year with this same style. But like we brought up about an hour ago, they had to be nearly perfect on offense and also had to be, you know, have the bonus of your defense getting a ton of takeaways. And it allowed for you then to maybe inflate your numbers more than they are. It's not to say they're a terrible offense. They're not. They're top 5 to 10 in almost every single category. But I think most people who watch the NFL go, yeah, but Detroit's probably better than them. The Rams are better than them on offense. Eagles probably no, but Tampa's had their days. Seattle certainly is better than pretty much everybody, it seems like, in terms of the eye test. And that's really where their issues come down to, is that they're not perfect this year. And it is causing them to lose more games, really, that they shouldn't.
And there's some of it that's on execution as well on the offensive line. The line has played a lot differently than they did last year. It was probably one of the best pass blocking seasons that we will ever see, as a matter of fact. And it does start there. Obviously, you throw off the timing. But yeah, against Miami, Allen has what, 3.5 on average seconds to throw? And he can't pull the trigger because people are not getting open. And again, it's definitely getting frustrating because it is the combination of the scheme and the talent at receiver not working to a point where it's hurting them now.
I am okay, though, if they bring in Dable for a small role. That
I would agree.
Those advisor, it's more like, you know, they're consultant. They come in, they have like the weird senior. That's a role. They're not going to fire Brady to bring in Dable as the OC. Number one, he'd have to rewrite the whole playbook. That ain't happening in November. I don't care what fantasy world you're living in. That's simply not
You're
happening.
Operating with the other person's playbook.
Yeah, basically. So he's not really doing anything there. He would be running the same stuff, and it's just not going to happen. Brady is okay enough. I think there is a mix of the talent around him is not good enough, and he is not good enough to scheme them out of it.
Yes.
You also, and something that I think a lot of people don't love talking about, I know I've heard calls about it saying that too, Allen is not playing his best. There are times where he is not taking the underneath throws and is looking deep and is missing wide open Khalil Shakir or even Keon Coleman. But he's also acknowledged many times himself, trust, 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 trust. And if he doesn't trust his receivers, well, there you go. He's holding on to the ball.
But if he's looking for those deeper plays, it does seem like it is now just a philosophical difference.
Yeah.
There's a philosophical difference between a quarterback that loves to... I'm gonna have fun with this.
He's a wild horse.
He loves to party.
Yeah.
You got a quarterback that loves to party, and Brady's offense is a 9 o'clock curfew.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably what I would liken it to at that point. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. I'm just thinking of Hot Rod in that one. Hi, my name is Rod, and I like to party.
That's kind of what it is.
That's kind of what Josh Allen's style is.
And you got the year last year, but again, they had to be borderline perfect for it to work as well as it did. And you're not getting the perfection this year. And then you also, I mean, we're talking a lot about the offense. The defense as well has been a huge problem all year.
The defense has been.
The run defense is a tragedy. For me, I can point a lot of that to how many injuries you've picked up have really, I think, just we've never been able to see that defense operate at even 90%.
And three of the top 10 rushing games this season in the entire NFL have happened against the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, so I don't want to make it sound like we're ignoring the defense. It's just more the offense is the name of the game right now. This is where everyone's at. The big trade talk was Jalen Waddle. That's a wide receiver.
Then Quinnen Williams is also brought up.
Quinnen Williams is brought up, but the Waddle was they had the highest bid. They wouldn't change their draft pick. By all intents and purposes, it sounds like Waddle was theirs 1 minute and not the next. Where Quinnen, it more sounds like they were there. They were in on it. Dallas obviously has the higher bid. And I also wonder, how does that go with how much capital you would have in the defensive tackle position with also having Deion Walker and TJ Sanders, paying at Oliver already, and picking up that Quinnen Williams contract. Boy, oh boy, that is a big one.
Yes, but also you'd have a four-man rotation if all players were healthy. That would be of like...
That'd be great. I wonder
it'd be the stuff of gods.
I wonder how the math would work on that. 803-0550, the number
to call. The math is whoever's on the field is good.
Right. No, that's fair. Let's go back to the phones. Marcus is with us next. Marcus, how are we doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
My input on this, and I tell you what, like all of what you guys have said is been very amazing. But
thank you.
You know, and Allen, it seems like the offense is anemic, you know, at this point. I'm glad to see that we did sign Hardman. We'll see how that does. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to be a slot receiver, but I think he's going to pull coverage from Coleman. But again, Coleman, you know what? He's not really performed at all. So, like, you know, I kind of feel that, like, you know, why Bean didn't, pull at the trigger, all right, was last year, if you remember, all right, you know, there were wide receivers that had to sort of, perform. And the one that performed was Hollins. Hollins came out, and he was amazing, and he did great. And you know what? He was able to pull coverage. And you know what? The offense was able to do something. I think that when we go up against teams like, you know, teams that we see every year, like the Chiefs, you know what? We know how to deal with them. So, I mean, we're all about that, you know? And so I think that, you know what, moving forward, I think that, you know, what we really need to do is just have to, focus on coaching. You know, I mean, I'm not really, you know, happy with what Brady is doing. But you know what? Daboll just got fired. So, I mean, I would love to see, you know, him come in as like maybe a coordinator or something to kind of like maybe help.
Just another mind to kind of help out the offense. It maybe isn't a bad thing. There's also always the saying, too, if there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I think with this, though, it could help. I will say, though, on the receivers, where the offense was able to open up, Matt Collins was fun for them. I wouldn't say he was great. Where the offense opened up was just having Amari Cooper on the field. It seemed that he seemed to draw coverage. He necessarily wasn't great for them.
He drew attention even though he wasn't getting the football.
But he drew enough attention that I think it allowed the Bills to be a little bit better on offense.
But he mentions Matt Collins, and I'm glad that he did.
Because Collins just had a good game.
No, not even that. Hollins was their deep threat last year. Yeah. It was actually kind of sold to us that way, almost frustratingly so. And then I remember how the season started with Xavier Worthy and the back and forth that some fans had. And I remember some guy yelling at me saying, what, Matt Collins is your deep threat? The answer was yes, actually. Yeah. And some of the big plays that were made deep, including against a couple teams in the playoffs.
Well, the AFC Championship game, he has a touchdown in that game.
It's Matt Collins. Mm-hmm. So there is a little bit of the, yeah, maybe there is a problem with not having a player that can successfully get deep and cause problems. But when it comes to a boundary receiver succeeding on this team, yeah, no, that is also on the scheme.
Yeah.
It's not just the talent, it is the scheme as well.
Yeah.
And I do want to make sure that I'm not ignoring that.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. 803-0550 if you want to join the show. We've only got a few more minutes. Got to take a quick time out here. Sabres Live at the top of the hour. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. The Sabres are in action tomorrow as we get ready for Sabres After Dark. They are taking on the Utah Mammoth, 9 p.m. tomorrow, 8 p.m. pregame right here on WGR.
Interesting comments from Lindy Ruff this morning with Jeremy and Joe.
Mm-hmm.
That it seems like it's a, I don't know, like I think the right word is haunting.
Yeah.
It is a haunting season right now for them. Like, obviously, what happened with Darlene's fiance, he goes back. By the way, good on the captain, by the way. He's getting on the ice with Frölunda, the club that he was with before in Sweden. So it's good to see he's trying to stay fresh. If that's not a man loyal to his cause, loyal to his team and loyal to the crest, I don't know what is. You're still trying to get the work in while you're making sure to visit your fiance. And then, of course, Zucker, Kulik, the blood clots for Kulik, the sickness for Zucker, where Lindy said he hasn't had solid food for 9 days.
Yeah.
Now it's just getting bizarre, and it's unfortunate that it's all happening like this at the same time. But can the Sabres get out of this? Well, we'll find out tomorrow night there. In the meantime, though, you'll hear more about the Buffalo Sabres with Brian Duff and Marty Baron as Sabres Live is coming up next here on WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.